11. Arthi made herself comfortable in one of the armchairs at a perfect viewing distance from Matteo and his disbelief. She knew she'd bagged Flick by the way the girl's mouth had dropped open. And now, it was only a matter of time before the painter came around. His secret was too precious for him not to. "Say that again, darling." "Don't call me darling," Arthi said, sitting back and willing away the stupid goosebumps conjured by his voice. "Arthi, dearest," Matteo amended, with eerie calm, giving her a glimpse of the beast that lay beneath his nonchalance. "Say that again, will you please?" "We're breaking into the Ethereum. The Festival of Night is around the corner. We'll use the auction as cover to find the missing ledger." Matteo dragged his hands down his face with a groan. "Firstly, no. Secondly, absolutely not. Especially not if the ram is involved."
"Oh, he isn't," Arthi said. "His incriminating ledger is, and we're going to get it."
Matteo looked perplexed. "And let me guess, you plan to expose the ram with it?" Flick looked very interested in her answer. Arthi pursed her lips to the side.
"Something like that."
"Which is exactly why we shouldn't do this," Matteo said. And it didn't slip her notice that he'd said we, including himself. "How do you even plan to meet the ram if you were to retrieve this ledger?" Arthi didn't want to discuss her post-retrieval plans in front of Laith.
"We'll figure something out. Maybe secure an invite to a fancy ball. Aren't they usually attended by anyone of importance?"
"The Imperial Square Gala," Flick said. "They only invite the top of the top to that one."
"Not the ram, sweet," Matteo said. "None of this is important right now," Laith asserted. Matteo gave him and his kitten a proper look. "Laith Syat," he said before Matteo could ask.
"Of the Horned Guard," Arthi added. "And that's his unnamed kitten, because he's one of those monsters who doesn't name his pets." Matteo rose and paced several feet, then sat down again.
"You brought the Horned Guard inside my... No. Arthi?"
He looked as exasperated as she often felt, and it filled her with glee.
"I believe you have much to tell me."
"Much has transpired since we last met," Arthi agreed.
"We've had quite the night," said Jin.
Arthi recounted the events of the past day and night, leaving out the finer details of her first exchange with Laith. If the intensity of Laith's gaze on her now was any indication, he had taken note of the omission.
"I can't help you," Matteo said when she was finished.
"And let me guess why," Arthi said. "Because you know nothing of the Ethereum?"
Matteo gave her a crooked grin.
"Exactly." Jin strolled closer, making a show of the coin dancing across his knuckles. She had known he would find it during their walk through the house. It was pewter, twice as big as a duvin and far prettier, engraved with an obscure A surrounded by vines and thorns. The words, "Mortui vivos docent," following the curve. "The dead teach the living."
"One Ethereum marker dedicated to one Matteo Andoni," Arthi announced.
"One personalised ticket to the inside. If anyone had a way in, it would be you." The Ethereum had very likely begged him to be a member, what with his social standing and white roaring.
"How..."
Matteo started before deciding otherwise. He sighed.
"Jin has, and how can I put this nicely, fingers that are slightly more adhesive than most,"
Arthi explained. Flick laughed with a tinkling bell of a sound, and Arthi, watchful as she was, saw how Jin lit up like a lighthouse at sea.
"Right, now that that's settled, Flick, are you in?"
Arthi asked. Flick didn't miss a beat.
"Yes."
She didn't ask for payment.
She didn't even give it a moment's thought. Everyone stared, and Arthi could tell that Jin had immediately written off her quick tongue as her being overwhelmed. But Arthi wasn't so sure. What will I receive in return? Flick asked too late.
Excitement, Arthi answered. Now sit down. Let's put that penmanship to work.
Flick sank into the matching armchair a good distance from Mateo.
Did you fail to notice the part where I hadn't agreed to help you?
Mateo asked. There was a smudge of black paint on the side of his neck, and another on the inner shell of his ear.
As sure as you fail to notice the part where I hadn't asked you to, Arthi replied.
He slumped back. I'm going to miss our chats when all of you turn up dead. Laith sat down on the rug in front of the coffee table and crossed his legs, an eye on his kitten as it curled up in the corner of the parlour.
You are going to ascertain it never comes to that.
Ascertain? Mateo repeated. Where did you say he's from again?
The dictionary.
But Mateo looked as if he knew exactly where Laith, with his coal-rimmed amber eyes and curved dagger, was from.
I think you might know, Arthi said.
He struck Arthi as the sort who knew so much that they had no option but to act the opposite. Mateo tipped his head. From a kingdom hewn of desert and strength, sprawling palaces and sparkling mirages.
You're Arawian.
The description alone made Arthi imagine she felt a little bit of that relentless heat and enchantment that Atenia did not have. Laith ran a finger absently along his exposed collarbone, pulling her gaze to the lean muscles outlined by his fitted sleeves.
Cursed to remain secluded, are you all not? Mateo asked.
No longer, Laith said distantly. We are now free to access the remainder of the world.
Were they really free?
If triumphing over their curse had simply moved them into a new circle of prey.
Next on Etenia's list, I can imagine, Arthi said.
Mateo laughed.
I do not think Arawia can be written off so quickly.
Apt, Arthi thought, looking at Laith.
Flick leaned forward.
Have you been there?
The kingdom was corralled by an impenetrable forest for a near century, Mateo said, affronted. I'm immortal, not ancient.
A discernible difference for sure, Jin said, rolling his eyes.
I'm curious why someone from that far away has taken interest in Atenia, Mateo continued, following Arthi's own line of thought.
And so keenly at that.
I like to excel at whatever I do, vampire, Laith replied, an edge to his voice.
The air went cold as they regarded one another, two predators in a pen. Arthi heard the shift of Jin's umbrella, the rise of Flick's breathing, that Mateo, being a vampire, registered with a flare of his nostrils. She studied Laith's calm, the steady beat of his gaze that missed nothing. He was hiding something as much as Flick was, but Flick wore her secrets on her face, plain as day.
Indeed I am a vampire, though if I had to choose a descriptor for myself, I think I'd use gorgeous or tantalizing.
Mateo lifted one leg over the other.
Anywho, it's an ingenious idea, infiltrating the Aetherium during the Festival of Night. They expect a full house for the charity auction, and you'll be able to bypass the issue of your pulses causing suspicion. Blood companions will be roaming the halls, and the vampires in attendance will be well fed.
But if you hadn't heard, vampires are going missing. At least 30 have been reported across the district in the span of a few days, several of whom are members of the Aetherium. It's believed the vampires are still out there, and not piles of dust, though you won't be hearing much about any of it.
Arthi wondered if he was more worried about the disappearances than he let on.
With no known correlation between any of the cases, there was every likelihood that he could be next.
My point is, Mateo continued, the Aetherium is on high alert,
which doesn't bode well for your little adventure.
I decide when we pull off this heist, Arthi said. He didn't seem to understand that she wasn't asking him.
And that's now. Where's the fire, darling?
Matteo leaned forward, and her retort disappeared off the edge of her tongue.
We don't do this. We lose Spindrift, Jin said finally.
Flick gasped. Arthi cut Jin a look. Laith didn't look too pleased either. Matteo's brows shot up. His concern almost looked genuine.
And who is threatening Spindrift?
When Arthi said nothing, Matteo sighed.
I'll take that silence to mean it's the ram.
Fine, since you ask so nicely, he said. He took the pencil from Flick and smoothed the paper down with a gentle hand. The very air seemed to relax with the gesture. There were canvases propped against the walls, paintbrushes holding their breath in half-full glasses, awaiting his return.
Now it's not that breaking in is impossible as much as it is obscenely difficult.
Matteo held out the coin.
Let's start with the Ethereum marker.
As everyone knows, there's no getting in without one. Everyone leaned close when he pressed a notch on its side, and a layer of the coin popped open on a tiny hinge.
Jin whistled. Now that's sexy.
See these numbers? Matteo asked. They were stamped along the marker's inner curve.
Each coin has a unique set.
Without a match of numerical code, you're not only denied access, you will suffer the very, very, very minor inconvenience of being impaled with a blunt stake through the heart.
He pursed his lips. A lot more painful for the living to die in such a way, but this is the Ethereum,
a society that cares oh so deeply about human suffering. Arthi had always known how the Ethereum dealt with trespassers, but when Laith slid a furtive glance at her now, uneasiness slithered through her. Did he know what she had planned to do once they located the ledger?
Think of it as their Lex Talionis, Matteo added.
Arthi saw Flick shiver. Perhaps she was too green for the job.
Tit for tat, Jin explained, knowing Arthi needed the definition.
He picked up Matteo's marker and flipped it, the coin winking out of sight for several seconds.
There's a flaw. A marker might have a unique identifier, but anyone can use it to gain access. Given how difficult it is to obtain a marker, from needing to be a certain age to holding a good standing in society, no vampire leaves it lying about.
Except you, Laith asked.
You know, I'm not sure I like him, Matteo said to Arthi.
If I needed to like everyone I worked with, I'd have to do everything myself, Arthi said.
Hey, Jin said.
Arthi bit back a laugh.
Well, Flick ventured, at least we have one marker, that's a start.
We do, Arthi said. Matteo's mouth curled slowly, and she knew he was going to refuse.
Your gaze upon a man, dearest, it's... I have some of the fastest runners in White Roaring. I should think your secret's worth more than your marker, Arthi said.
Start with the Hanging Cliff. They're quick at the press, Jin said, tilting his head to Arthi.
The gold rudder prints faster, Arthi said, tilting her head in return. Especially given the magnitude of the news.
You have a point.
Or, Flick said, you can steal his marker and let him beg his way in.
Arthi and Jin stared at her, both equally impressed, and Flick blushed under the scrutiny.
You really are quite adorable, regaling me with such heinous threats. Do you think I find them frightening?
Matteo rose from his seat, leaning closer to Arthi. She inhaled sharply. His next words were low, for her alone.
You know, darling, not everyone needs to be threatened to work for you. It's possible for someone to simply want to. Before she could make sense of his words, he straightened.
Short of tossing you in through the window, I don't have a way to get you inside. And contrary to what you might think, threatening me in increasingly creative ways won't make me produce ideas.
Flick sputtered and pointed at his marker.
But this, Matteo laughed. This is worthless, sweet. No more than a paperweight.
You'll find I don't care much for the Ethereum. But I'll help you on one condition. Take me with you.
No,
said Laith without missing a beat. He rose to his feet. Arthi lifted a brow at him.
No?
We're not striking deals with questionable parties. If we want to help you, we are leaving.
He says help, as if you weren't just threatening me, Matteo said. Jin, still leaning against the wall, barked a laugh.
Are you hearing yourself? You jumped in through a second-story window, and she said yes.
Khalas, Laith said.
We will do this my way.
Or what? Arthi asked, going still.
We can end this deal right now and let them blow Spindrift to the seas. I'll build it back. Better and bigger than before.
Fire beat under her skin, tumbling like the sea that brought her to these shores. Through the corner of her eye, she saw Jin stiffen, but he was smart enough not to put his mouth where he shouldn't and call her bluff.
If he fails to, Laith began.
If he fails, we all do, Arthi said, so you had better pick up the slack.
Now sit down, Jin said, and the tension rose as his grip tightened around the handle of his umbrella, even as the rough grind of his voice gave away his distress. Laith remained standing.
That's settled then.
We might as well get the ducks waddling after us too, Jin said, glaring at Arthi as if she'd gone and destroyed Spindrift herself.
Why is it worthless? Were you exiled?
Flick asked.
Matteo squinted an eye. Exiled isn't the right word. My entrance would cause quite a scene, and I don't think I, nor the Ethereum, is ready for it, especially while they're strung tight with the disappearances.
Why?
Arthi asked. Matteo winked.
A story for another night.
Flick still looked confused. But you said you wanted to get inside.
Arthi drummed her fingers on the arm of the chair. She didn't know what he'd done to be not exiled, but she would find out. She always did.
He wants us to sneak him in.
You want to see someone in particular.
You have a very big brain for someone so small, Matteo said, genuinely impressed.
Jin smothered a snort.
Do we have a deal?
Arthi's lips thinned.
I seem to be striking deals with every questionable man I see.
I'll get you in.
Jin cast her a look. She knew she made it sound as if getting inside the Ethereum was as easy as swinging by the nearest eatery. As if they'd already hammered out their plans and secured their way in. She nodded at the pencil in Matteo's hand.
Now, tell us about the Ethereum.
12. Jin. Jin watched Matteo draw a line down the length of Arthi's paper, and slowly the stately profile of the Ethereum on Ivy Lock Street began to take shape. Was there really no other way to save Spindrift? Jin thought of his mother's stern love, his father's easy smiles, and wondered what they would do. The Ethereum was old money paired with old families. It was born in the Wolf of White Roaring's massacre, when the government approved the creation of the society that was part authority, part revelry, where members spent their nights enjoying the Ethereum's dark delights, and Atenian gossips flocked to its stone walls, hoping for a glimpse. Though the Ethereum never found the Wolf of White Roaring, it did its part in keeping order among vampires, from apprehending those that breached vampire-human laws, like drinking blood without consent, to those who violated basic Atenian laws like burglary. But as the ram continued to step on toes with a widespread anti-vampire agenda, it seemed to Jin that the Aetheria maintaining order was more tolerance than not. And as Arthi would say, tolerance suggested something had an end. When would the Aetherium's patience end? How long was it before the Aetherium decided it didn't want to heed the Atenian monarchy's wishes? Here we are, Mateo said, presenting his sketch with a wave of his hand. Stripped of its fancy corridors and furnished nooks, the Aetherium is comprised of three essential parts. The parlour leads to the central ballroom, where parties and events like the Festival of Nights charity auction take place. Next we have the right wing, with living spaces that double as a home for debauchery, and then the left wing, used for matters of business. Offices, the library, et al. He drew a cushion of space around the offices and shaded it in.
Why is it shaded?
Flick asked. And you draw very nicely, I dare say. Jin wondered if he should take up drawing. Mateo laughed. Haven't heard that one before.
You don't hear it nearly enough, though, Arthi said, forever observant.
Mateo's hand slipped, the only indicator he'd heard her. It seemed her words had landed a little too close, for he had no quick comeback. I know a thing or two about being recognised for the wrong reasons. For Arthi, it was her skin tone over her brains. For Mateo, it was his beauty over his talent. Outside of 337 Arms Place, his name was more often associated with titters and temptation than respect.
It's... Mateo cleared his throat. Shaded because it's a secure area. There are two ways to get into this bit here, but both are restricted to authorised members only. No guests of any sort. Necessary, as it's home to the vaults and several high-profile offices. If your ledger is anywhere, it'll be in here.
Authorised members and anyone being sent to confinement, Arthi said, gaze keen on his sketches.
How's that work?
Confinement? Mateo asked slowly. Get rejected at the doors, and one of the Aetherium's two bouncers will whisk you away, depending on who'll be working that day. But the entire point of this operation is not to get caught, isn't it? He pointed at his sketch. Anywho, we'll need to get into the building first, which is through a single entry point, fortified by our doorkeeper, Elise Thorne.
His quick yet winsome sketch of Elise told Jin what Mateo thought of her.
To maximise time, two members can get through at once. Each of them inserts their marker through a slot.
He sketched a little box on either side of the doorkeeper and connected them to channels that ran inside the Aetherium.
And then those markers are propelled through these two metal chutes to this room, where her sister Eleanor verifies them. The chutes themselves are set into the floor, but visible through a glass covering, in case they need to spot jams and the like. Or to show off their workmanship, Jin thought. That was what he'd do.
Mateo drew a small room at the end of the chutes and a tiny stick figure inside of it. Someone didn't like Eleanor.
She matches the numerical code, Arthi said.
Mateo nodded.
If matched and approved, the marker returns through the chutes marked in green. If rejected, it'll be marked red. If you ask me, the markers seem to have us in a predicament, seeing how we don't have any.
Hence why I'm not asking you, Arthi said.
Mateo studied the parlour moulding with a sigh. Surprisingly, his walls were devoid of art, even his own. Ivor came and went, metal soles clicking, his disapproval of Arthi and Jin spelled out in his frown. He didn't offer them food, and that drove Jin's disapproval of him up drastically.
If Andoni's doesn't work, we'll be in need of five markers,
Laith said, as if that was Jin and Arthi's fault.
The markers aren't our concern, Arthi said.
Flick clutched her beret.
You can't possibly mean that. They'll stake us through the heart.
Death by the stake,
does sound like a fancy way to go, Jin agreed.
Steak is a type of Athenian meat, no?
Said Leith.
No, the letters would be arranged a little differently, Flick said. The Peakies eat it mostly raw as homage to the cannibalistic carnage they commit throughout the world, Arthi snarked.
Mateo choked. She looked at Leith.
You should try it sometime, since you're chummy with their lot. The markers aren't our concern because Flick will be forging them, Arthi continued. She'll create new ones with new identifiers and have them added to the log. We'll only need one actual marker to get her in.
I've never forged anything that complex, Flick said.
Group project, Jin said.
I'll study the marker and give you the plans. You can work your magic after.
If she thought she was quick about hiding behind those curls when his words made her smile, she was sorely mistaken.
And if he had thought every pretty girl's smile was created equal, he too was sorely mistaken.
Do you still have access to casting materials? He asked, clearing the knot from his throat.
Flick nodded. A foundry not far from here.
Good,
Arthi said. And how long will you need to add an entry into the log over in the Aetherium's archives?
It's hard to say without seeing it, she said eventually.
Maybe 3 minutes?
Wonderful, Jin commented, jabbing his umbrella in the air. Just enough time for them to grab a steak and personalise it with your name.
Flick ducked her head, and Jin decided then and there that teasing Felicity Linden was a delicious sport.
He's right, Arthi said. And it's not just one numerical sequence that needs inserting.
Flick looked over Mateo's marker.
I may be able to halve that time.
Better, Arthi said with a nod. But it'll need to be a fraction of that. The Aetherium is efficient, and any distraction we pull to get you inside that room won't hold for long.
Without studying both the layout and script in the log beforehand, I don't think I can.
Arthi raised her brows, and Jin read the words in that look. It took a certain kind of confidence to air one's incompetence before an audience.
I didn't ask.
Mateo rose and strode to a cart by the wide curtains where a decanter sat in crystal, narrow glasses rimmed in silver beside it.
Can I interest any of you in a drink?
It wasn't tea or even liquor in the crystal bottle, but something a lot more red.
Arthi stared at him, her gaze unreadable.
Flick's eyes were wide, while Leith looked uninterested.
Suit yourselves, Mateo said with a shrug.
Jin turned his attention back to the sketches and the marker they needed to replicate, hinged lid and all. Still, he heard the vampire swallow, his subdued yet relieved exhale, the tiny tinkle of the glass returning to the cart.
I know where the sisters live. If you can study their penmanship, it might speed up the forging. I can give you the address, and you can swindle a sample or two that no one will miss,
Mateo offered. He gave Arthi a look.
If you ask nicely.
Arthi's lips curved upward.
Please, Mateo, give me the address before I take your paint and redecorate your walls.
You would never,
Mateo said with a sharp gasp. They had just threatened to expose his secret, and this was what scared him?
That is heinous.
I can be heinous. I can also be worse than that, Arthi promised.
Enough,
Leith said. Poor Sod was feeling left out more like it.
You're forgetting something. How will Flick get to the marker archive room inside the Aetherium? Without the valid marker herself.
The original plan was to use Mateo's marker,
Jin said, tapping his umbrella on the floor.
Before we learned that it's unusable.
Arthi shifted her focus to Mateo's sketch. More specifically, the two chutes that ran along the floor from the entrance to the archive room. Jin knew what she was thinking.
If I get in first, we can rig the chutes, he said. You said they're covered by glass. We'll just have to break it. Cut the chute open and approve the marker yourself? Mateo asked. Rejected by one sister, but unbeknownst to the other. Smart. Arthi was nodding, deep in thought, studying the drawings and missing nothing. Right, so here's our play. Jin goes in as a blood companion. Jin wasn't excited at the prospect of calling in a favour, but he would do what was needed for Spindrift. He tapped the entrance with the point of his umbrella. Flick follows with your marker. It gets rejected in the archive room, Arthi answered right on his heels.
But I'll approve the marker on its way back through the chute, Jin said.
And I'm in, Flick said, joining in. Arthi's brow pinched at the interruption. Jin almost laughed.
Yes, you are, love. Once you're in, I'll cause us a distraction, as I usually do by walking into a room.
Which Flick will use to get into the archive room? Arthi said before Flick could.
She inserts the numerical codes, and our forged markers are now the real deal,
Jin finished, wrapping his umbrella on the ground. Mateo pursed his lips.
A solid plan, but you still can't use my marker. Just like sending forged markers through before they're added to the log, my marker wouldn't trigger a regular old rejection.
They're typically for renewals or suspensions, not violations. Mine will create more of a ruckus than help our cause. We'll still need an actual marker. Even an expired one will do if Jin can get to the chutes. Arthi looked deep in thought before she glanced up at Mateo.
Make me a list of as many Aetherian members as you can remember. Someone's bound to have a secret they don't want shared, and they'll need to let us borrow their marker for an evening if they want to keep it.
Mateo pulled out a fresh sheet of paper to begin his list. He looked a little too eager for the task, and Jin had a feeling it was going to be full of vampires the painter didn't like.
So vicious. So ambitious. I like it.
13. Arthi. Arthi wouldn't commend herself until the ledger was in her hands. The Festival of Night was a week-long event, beginning with an auction, the proceeds from which the Aetherium gifted to the public to better their image. They were the good vampires, the high-class, enigmatic, impressive ones. She wasn't fond of how the living treated vampires, but she loathed the Aetherium's distaste of lesser vampires even more.
Speaking of a full house, Mateo said, rearranging his decanters and casting Arthi a look. You won't be able to enter the Aetherium armed, not even with a renowned pistol such as yours.
Renowned, and what Mateo wasn't aware of. Special. She drew her pistol and shifted it in the light. Gold pooled into the dark abysses of its filigree. Flick was staring. Laith pretended he wasn't. But they didn't have to worry about Calibor being seen or getting them kicked out.
This? Arthi asked, pointing it at him. He'll dress up nice enough for the occasion. Just like the rest of us will.
You'll be recognised either way with that hair, you know, Mateo said.
Arthi shrugged. She was counting on it.
Why do you go through the trouble of dyeing your hair? Flick asked. What's the first thing people notice about you? Arthi asked.
My skin.
And what's the first thing you notice about me?
The hair, she replied without missing a beat.
Exactly, Arthi replied.
Everything else, like the brown of her skin and the disparities that stemmed from it, came second.
And then there are the whispers. Her skin's like caramel, they say, or tea steeped too long and doused in milk.
Strange that it's food they see when it's anything different than the norm, no? It's not much, but I like giving them something else to talk about.
Well,
if it's any consolation, darling, I think you look dangerous, even with that fairy floss hair,
Mateo said, returning to his seat.
Now, please, put that away.
She spun the pistol around her trigger finger, and Mateo's eyes bugged out of his skull. She wondered if he was recounting the previous night,
when Jin had shot him. Arthi dropped a glance at his exposed chest. Spotless. Not a bruise or blemish marred his creamy skin. He had to have drunk quite a bit of blood to heal so quickly. Mateo cleared his throat, and Arthi looked up to find him watching her. He winked. And Arthi had no way to explain why she'd been staring at his naked chest without alerting the rest of the crew to that fact. She decided to keep her pistol out a little longer.
No weapons, Khalas. No one's risking anything beside the clothes on their person, Laith said.
For once, he and Mateo were in agreement, and it was clear the vampire didn't like it.
Oh, we can omit those two, if you're concerned, he simpered. I would prefer to omit you altogether, Laith replied, then pressed his lips thin, looking irritated at himself for engaging.
Arthi holstered her pistol. She knew Jin didn't like going in bare. He had as many as 10 different tools on his person at a time, usually a lockpick or a knife, and always, always his umbrella.
Don't tell me you have no trouble setting foot in the Aetherium unarmed, she said.
Darling, gleefully reading the occasional obituary is the most violence you'll ever see me partake in, Mateo said, not the least bit apologetic.
Laith sighed, but Arthi supposed there was skill involved in abhorring violence. He had to make use of other methods to stay safe, like make a name for himself as a painter.
What about the Aetherium wall?
We have to get past that before we can be concerned about the front door, Flick pointed out. Laith's gaze drifted across the buildings Mateo had begun sketching along the lower half of the paper beside the Aetherium, giving them a view of the street.
We can scale it.
No one in a city of crooks builds a wall without precautions, Arthi said. It's fortified and impenetrable. You can't climb it. But Laith was not without pride.
I was trained to master walls far more difficult and cover distances just as great.
He's right. He definitely has the look of a cultist,
Jin said, biting into the apple Laith had given him.
It is not a cult. Being a Hashashin is an art. Our creed shapes bodies into blades, though none can ever be as great a killer as our kingdom's crown prince.
Your crown prince is a murderer? Jin asked.
At least he's upfront about it, Flick pointed out. What leader isn't a murderer? Laith looked insulted.
He is a changed man now.
Arthi attributed Laith's self-assurance to his training. To whittle a man into a blade required stripping away fear and misgivings and apprehension, leaving ample room for pride to bloom. Mateo cleared his throat.
Regardless, the wall won't be of concern.
We're going to blow it up, are we? Jin asked, tilting his head.
You know, I didn't think that was your style.
I forged for someone in possession of dynamite, Flick suggested, looking a tad too excited at the idea. I'm sure we can arrange something with him.
Mateo frowned, as if realizing for the first time that he was in a room full of people unlike him.
What? Goodness no. The gates will be open for the event. The Festival of Night is as much a display of the Aetherium's generosity to the public as it is a party. Press will be there, possibly even adoring fans. Enough of a crowd for us to blend in, both through the gates and in the gardens.
What I'm more concerned about is this guard here.
He tapped at a spot above the left side of the entrance, where a chunk of the roof had been cut for a dormer balcony. It extends to a mezzanine inside, designed so he can survey both the gardens and the Aetherium foyer. He'll spot Flick heading into the archive room.
A single guard for both inside and out, Laith said, studying the sketch. I can take care of him.
These are Aetherium vampires. Don't get cocky, Arthi said. I'll scope it out first.
Wonderful,
And who are we stealing from again?
Mateo asked.
Did you miss the past hour or so?
Jin asked.
Oh, but who within the Aetherium are you stealing from?
Arthi narrowed her eyes.
I don't see...
A vampire by the name of Pen,
Laith cut in.
Pen,
Mateo repeated slowly, his gaze narrowing on Arthi.
As in Pen Arundel, head of the Aetherium.
She refused to meet his eyes, pulling his sketches toward her and running a finger over the building rising to the Aetherium's left. It was beautifully rendered. Mateo's work was much like him. Timeless, refined, and sensual in a way she didn't have the right words for.
The head? Flick asked. Does that make the job harder?
Not exactly, Mateo said, reminding Arthi of last night. He knew far more about her than he should.
Why not? Jin asked, and Arthi felt his eyes on her back, no doubt trying to decide if she'd known this beforehand. He's the head of the Aetherium. Seems like someone forgot to mention an important detail.
Head of the Aetherium means he'll be involved in the charity auction, Mateo pointed out. He won't be guarding his office. Jin continued watching her for a good long minute.
Well, good.
Flick leaned closer.
Isn't it funny how the Aetherium shines even beneath the old roaring tower's shadow?
Ah, yes, the Peaky's greatest invention yet. A very, very big clock,
Jin announced, finally looking away.
Laith scowled. Invention? It is a minaret they adapted to include a clock. What is the purpose of a tower if not to magnify a voice?
To magnify the passage of time, Arthi replied, tracing the tower as it tapered to its knife-point peak. Unfortunately, for all of us, those with voices in this fair country are loud enough. Arthi rolled up the plans and pulled on her cap. Let's scope the place. Mateo went to a box on the side credenza, where he pulled out a pair of supple gloves and tinted spectacles. He took Jin's umbrella and propped it open while Jin sputtered a protest.
It is a perfectly gloomy day for a stroll.
It is a good day for a stroll, Flick agreed. Ivylock Street will be clear of the lunch crowd right about now, Arthi said, pocket watch in hand, because there wasn't a single clock in the house.
Mateo regarded the little instrument. Vampires weren't fond of noting the passage of time. Arthi supposed it was an unwelcome reminder that they were here forever, cursed to watch generations rise and fall, destined to be forgotten. The clock tower's position beside the Aetherium was a cruel joke indeed.
Don't frown, she simpered. I'm not letting you out my sight until this job is done.
He slipped on his tinted spectacles.
You certainly know how to motivate a man, darling.
On their walk back after surveying the Aetherium, Arthi began putting together the first stages of her plan. Jin announced he was about to die of hunger, and Flicked looked ready to keel over. So they stopped at a coffee house.
A coffee house instead of Spindrift,
Mateo drawled. He sat under the shade of the awning and set Jin's umbrella across his leg, tipping his head back to the skies. Arthi wondered how often he left his house during the day.
It was excessively gloomy today, as most of White Roaring's days tended to be, with its smog-filled skies. But not every day was like that. Not only did direct sunlight harm vampires, but it would have been impossible for Mateo to have kept his secret this long, as the undead didn't cast shadows. Someone would have noticed.
What will your patrons think when they see you here?
He asked. Arthi shrugged and pulled out a chair for herself. People were always hungry, and hungry dogs were never loyal.
Our patrons come to Spindrift because they wish to,
not because we drive them here through ulterior means. Greed will get me nowhere.
Spindrift had the best tea and a crew that brewed and baked the best in turn. If people wanted to spend their hard-earned coin on something inferior, that was fine by her. One can only learn from their mistakes.
Morals, Laith scoffed. What of those secrets you collect? Do you pay for them?
I pay the same for Atenian secrets as Atenia has paid for its atrocities. Nothing, Arthi said, her voice tight.
You'll find Arthi's morals to be quite like the sea. They choose upon whom to enact their wrath, Jin said as he disappeared inside the coffee house.
So we've noticed, Laith drawled.
He exasperated her, and she didn't quite understand why. He seemed to enrage every part of her that her typical anger did not. It seared her chest, burned low in her belly. It confused her. A waiter brought him a tray with a cup of coffee, a spoon and a bowl of sugar.
What do you think of Atenia?
Flick asked him. Laith gave it a moment's thought.
It is industrial, crisp, and yet everything about it is bland, especially the food.
Arthi remembered very little of her life outside Atenia. When she closed her eyes and dared to think of Salan, that place she once called home, before she was thrown into a little boat and thrust out to sea, she didn't think of fiery foods, or the sticky heat, or the lush foliage. She saw red. On her hands, flooding the shore, dyed across uniforms, smeared on the leaders who had been held less accountable than a refugee on the streets. Jin returned with a half-eaten pastry oozing raspberry jam, dark as blood, and a paper bag marked with the buttery imprint of a strudel. He peered at the teacup on a passing waiter's tray and sighed.
Imagine falling in love with someone and learning they make tea the colour of bone.
As he finished the first of his pastries and sat down, Flick's stomach growled like a beast. Jin folded the bag on its crease with a frown and inched it toward the centre of the table, wiping his fingers on a handkerchief monogrammed with a J. The corner was singed black. It had been years since the fire, yet he still clung to the hope that his parents were alive. Arthi never shared in his hope, outwardly. She scoured the remains of his parents' house and threatened enough officials to know the fire at the Siwang residence was no accident. But until she had proof that they were alive and an actual lead to follow, she'd continue acting as if she didn't believe they could have survived. Arthi wouldn't give Jin more hope until she was certain. She knew what it was like to have that ripped away.
Are you not having anything?
Laith was watching her as he piled two cubes of sugar into his cup and fed a third to his cat.
I have very refined tastes, Arthi said.
You're a snob, you mean?
Better a snob than someone mistaking sugar for flavour, she replied.
A slow smirk curled the side of his mouth, and he made sure she was looking when he added a third cube into his cup, stirring it thoroughly before meeting her eyes and dropping in a fourth.
Can't blame me for needing a way to work with something so bitter.
Can't make a choice without meeting its consequence. Laith lowered his gaze to her mouth to irk her further. Then he sat back and set the spoon on the table.
Our high captain seems to be keeping a close eye on you, Jin mumbled.
The way Flick can't stop staring at you?
Arthi asked.
If anything, he said,
folding and tucking his handkerchief away.
It's because you terrify her, and I'm the only decent one around. You, however, he gave her a look. Don't forget that he's a horned guard. Don't stray from the plan.
Arthi rolled her eyes. Him and his tieless club-collar shirts and tender concerns.
I'm serious, Arthi, he said.
As am I, more often than you, Jin.
He left the paper bag on the table and pushed his chair back, nearly toppling over a young lady who clutched the wide hoop of her skirt as she regained her balance. A chaperone fumed before he saw the look on Jin's face and decided he would rather live another day. Arthi hadn't meant for him to get that upset.
I really believed you were the more charming of the Casimirs, Mateo remarked.
Jin slipped his hands into his pockets.
Oh, I live and breathe charm, vampire. Sometimes one needs a knife to drive a point home.
Arthi ignored the weight of Laith's gaze, left the table, and crossed the street in the direction of Spindrift. For whatever reason, she glanced back at the coffee house. But neither the High Captain nor Mateo were there. Only Flick, picking up the paper bag with the streusel Jin had left behind for her.
14. Jin. Though Jin had flipped the open sign to closed on Spindrift with a heavy heart, reassuring himself that they would only remain closed until they retrieved the ledger, not a single member of the crew had a moment's rest as Arthi delegated tasks in the lead-up to the Aetherium's Festival of Night. Today he was getting those handwriting samples for Flick. He hopped out of a hansom cab in Admiral Grove, tipping his hat as the horse trundled away. He glanced at the address Mateo had given him a few days ago. The trees swayed in greeting, the hush-hush of their leaves flinging him back years and years. He straightened the lapels of his coat and double-checked the laces on his shoes, swallowing to make sure the buttons of his shirt were all up, as if Admiral Grove was still his home and not the grave of a child long gone. When Jin was a little boy and Arthi was a little girl, she taught him the secret to survival. It wasn't food or a warm place to huddle every night. It wasn't coin or clean water. It was preoccupation. He couldn't cry for his parents if he was busy running for his life. He couldn't panic if his hands were busy swiping coin. There were days when Jin thought Arthi had engrossed herself so deeply into their new life that she'd forgotten the ones she'd had before it. It was why she never spoke of it. It was why there was no sorrow in her eyes, nor fear, only anger, bright and vengeful as a fire, boiling hotter than Spindrift tea. Movement up ahead caught his eye. Flick was waiting on one of the many benches placed beneath the street's arching trees. Were those pants she was wearing under her calf-length dress? Well, well, Felicity, what a surprise. He was fairly certain those were Arthi's pants, but the outfit was far more suited to their impending task than her lavender one from the other day, even if the lovely moss green was still too bright. Any more vibrant, and he would have feared arsenic poisoning just from being near her. A twill mid-length coat in a soft brown completed the ensemble. Jin was like her, once. Oblivious, innocent. Shoes shined by someone else, clothes pressed before he woke, never a concern for the roof above his head. He had no grievances about what he'd become, but he missed what he had been. Perhaps missed was the wrong word, because that meant he was ready to up and leave Arthi and Spindrift and everything else behind at first chance, when he wasn't. He had changed, and that was what he wasn't proud of. He'd allowed the streets to rip a young boy apart and put something else together in his stead. The same happened to anyone who was displaced. To Chester, to Rennie, to Arthi. But change for Arthi Casimir was a finely tailored suit that fit all her edges well. She sought it out. Flick didn't. And though she wasn't his to force back into a mould she might have outgrown, he wouldn't allow his world to be the reason why she felt she needed to break free of it. He stopped. A flame danced from a brass lighter in her hand, growing like a beast threatening to jump down his throat.
Hello, Jin, she said, and his heart did something funny. But maybe that was because she pocketed the lighter as she spoke.
Felicity, he replied, dipping his chin. She started to correct him, before he peered at her through the curls shrouding most of her face.
Why are you hiding?
This is Admiral Grove. She ducked deeper into her coat. What if I'm spotted? Because people like them didn't blend in with the tone of their skin, the shape of their eyes, the texture of their hair, or the lilt of their tongues. We're meant to stand out, Arthi would say. But Jin would be lying if he said he didn't sometimes wish for anonymity.
Sitting still will ensure that, you know, Jin replied, gesturing with a hand.
After you, m'lady. Have you heard from your snitchers? She asked, and the hope in her voice made it hard to hold her gaze. Has my mother come to check on me?
Jin started walking. He didn't want to lie, but he had heard from their snitchers, and Felicity Linden's mother had not, in fact, checked on her. She hadn't even sent a footman.
Flick shot him a look, surprising him with the flint in her gaze, and marched ahead in the direction of the Thorn sisters' house.
I asked you a question, she said eventually, keeping to the white-bricked wall beside them. She was careful, despite her guile, and Jin felt she knew, deep down, that her mother might not have even thought of her. But admitting something was far more difficult than knowing it. She tilted her head again.
Did my mother say something distasteful?
Jin sighed. If only, love, he thought to himself. He double-checked the address for the umpteenth time, just to give himself something to do.
Flick watched him.
Lie, he told himself. But when he opened his mouth, the fib wouldn't form. Irritation took hold instead. Irritation at Arthi for dragging Flick into their mess. Irritation at Lady Linden for abandoning her daughter.
Jin, answer my...
He wouldn't. He couldn't. And because he couldn't use his words, he closed the distance between them. Flick took a step back, and then another, until he had her caged between him and the wall. She smelled of sunlight and wildflowers, underlined by her soap, a peachy scent that was as sweet as his pastries. Jin had to stop himself from leaning in and burying his nose in her hair. He tossed his umbrella to his other hand, wishing he could take her back home and tuck her into her quilts and slippers and the care of maids.
I know what you're doing, she whispered.
Oh? He asked.
And what is that?
Only a tiny sound answered from the back of her throat, half whimper, half growl.
You were given a job, Felicity, he said. A job you agreed to undertake. And when we work, we don't let distractions come between us.
He bent closer, just in time to catch her gaze sweep across his lips like a touch. His pulse jumped. Her breath tangled with his, rough and surprised, and as shocked as her hooded eyes of deep, dark gold that glittered like black diamonds.
You. Jin knew he was damned when he had to clear his own throat. You understand me?
I understand, she whispered, and he should not have followed the bow of her lips shaping the words.
He should not have let his eyes wander over the gentle curve of her cheek, the lush coils of her lashes, the anticipation clinging to the air between them. He ground out a breath and straightened. Now come. Criminal activities await. Then he wrapped his umbrella on the pavement and walked away.
Such a pretty house, Flick said, when they stopped before a handsome dwelling with more stories than were necessary and a pitched roof.
The awning rippled in the breeze, rosebuds swaying in the trim garden. A hopeless laugh slipped out of him.
So insouciant.
I beg your pardon. Doesn't that mean I'm childish?
You're a toff, Felicity, Jin said. Didn't you learn your words?
She ducked her head. I prefer the art of them, the way they're written.
The art of handwriting, Jin said.
Flick nodded.
The way we can deduce a thousand things about the person who wrote a word just by studying the way they wrote it. the way they dot their I's or cross their T's, the way their script might loop or slant. Were they angry? In love? Harried or at leisure? Frivolous or perhaps conceited? And so their rhetoric was better ignored than heeded. Words themselves can't always unfold a person the way their writing can. It was the most romantic way of looking at the world, which meant it fit Flick and her pastel hues and fierce curls just right. "Why are you looking at me like that?" she asked. Jin hadn't even realized he was staring. "Get yourself together, man." And why was he having a hard time finding what to say when he usually had no trouble stringing together exactly what a woman wanted to hear? Flick was suddenly shy. "Let's just..." She stopped and gestured to the house. "Right," Jin said quickly, nearly tripping as he turned around. Most of the windows were closed, their curtains drawn. Only a single one on the second floor was propped open. Why couldn't it have been the balcony doors, just several yards away? Jin ignored the drainpipe in favour of the frills that jutted in enough places that the house was a fancy ladder itself. "It's your skirts, love," Jin said, gripping what he could. Flick didn't reply. Jin reached for another handhold, and then the next, relaxing his toes on a windowsill before he looked down. Flick hadn't even moved. She was standing by the house, watching his ascent with uncertainty. Her face scrunched in confusion, and she said, quite sweetly, "But why hitch your skirts when you can open a door?" Jin screwed his jaw shut. He hadn't seen the door. "Because you always overthink," Arthur commented in his head.
"Didn't know you could pick a lock."
"Oh, I can't," Flick admitted. "It was open, actually." Jin sucked in a slow breath. "Were you going to wait until I got to the top?" She tilted her head. "I wasn't sure how to tell you." He sighed and dropped to the damp grass, then followed her inside the house. It was cool and almost sterile, if not for the fresh planks of cedar stacked on the counter of an unlit kitchen. Barely a kitchen, really, for it was devoid of food, and Jin didn't think the crystal glasses lining the shelves were used for juice. Light cut through the curtains and fell across Flick, illuminating a single eye in a shade of deep gold that reminded him of a sunlit meadow with sunflowers wide and wild. "Jin?" "Right, the mission at hand. This was already going splendidly. Anything of use will be on the upper floors," he murmured, creeping out of the kitchen. He held out his umbrella to stop her from parading onward.
"Careful,"
she pushed past him. "Mateo said the house is empty."
"Still."
Flick froze on the second floor landing, then whirled to him with wide eyes. Jin didn't think. He bounded up the stairs three at a time and shoved her into the nearest open room with him, ignoring her surprised yelp. The sisters supposedly worked at the local bank until nightfall. Jin glanced at the draped window where the sun was pressed against the heavy fabric. It was barely noon. Mateo had lied, which meant anything he'd told them about the aetherium could be a lie too. Jin was going to sharpen a stake and sharpen it some more and then finish the job he'd begun when he'd shot him. He pressed a finger to his lips and peered around the door jamb until he heard what Flick had. "Well," measured sounds slipped out of the bedroom at the end of the hall. Jin relaxed his hold. He snuck a peek at Flick and immediately regretted it when a moan slithered beneath the closed door. "Aren't we going to see?" Flick asked, eyes wide. "To..." Jin stopped and faced her fully.
"Oh ho, Felicity. What have we here? A voyeur?"
"A what? No," Flick said, too mortified to bristle at his use of her full name. "Why would you say that? Whoever that is could be hurt."
"Ah."
He reconsidered her. Despite her days on the street, with a mother like Lady Lyndon,
Flick was even more sheltered than a typical girl of high society.
No one's in pain besides me. Let's go.
Flick didn't move.
The vexing girl.
What do you mean?
They're in a bedroom, love. What do you think vampires do to pass the time?
He asked pointedly. She paused, and he knew the right answer had dawned upon her by the way her skin flushed like the sky before sunset, and her gaze settled to the ground.
Oh, I didn't know it sounded like that,
she murmured to herself. Jin found himself unable to leave her be.
Well, I didn't know what they did to pass the time, she sputtered. Take up knitting.
Oh, they're knitting all right. And you really need to dress more appropriately for jobs like these. You could have been seen. You stand out like a flag.
Flick gasped. Better a flag than to dress like someone's dead. Jin laughed. He scanned the hall and found the glass doors of an office. Empty house or not, he was going to get her those samples. At the door, he dug out a lockpick and gently worked it in until Flick bumped his arm and it struck with a tink that rang as loud as a blast.
I may be irresistible, love, but I'm also claustrophobic, he whispered.
She shuffled a few steps back, and Jin listened as the pins felt beneath his ministrations, the lock finally giving way with a pleasurable click.
Not through yet, he murmured, tugging his gloves off with his teeth.
He withdrew a tiny case out of his pocket and swiped at the gel with his finger, rubbing it down the hinges and coating the metal nice and slick. Flick stared. Jin had to bite his cheek against a thought. He pulled open the quiet doors with a flourish. A heavy oak desk sat in the centre of the ample office, littered with papers and files. There were pens scattered among open books, and a monocle dangled off a lamp. A cart similar to Mateo's was off to the side, with a decanter full of blood.
Grab yourself a drink and get to work, Jin instructed.
Very funny, Flick whispered. She tiptoed around, her hand hovering over the desk, reaching but touching nothing, a shadow of fascination on her face.
In your own time, he added.
Flick scowled. I can't work with you standing over me.
Would you prefer I sat down?
She flung open the curtains with a tiny growl. Then, realizing they could be spotted, closed them back up. Jin watched as she pulled out her supplies, focus slipping into the crease of her brow and the planes of her face. She layered a graphite sheet and then a slip of paper under a diary page, slowly tracing over it with a pen. Jin released a breath and dug out a clove rock. It was only after it struck his teeth and settled on his tongue that he heard it. Footsteps. Someone was coming down the hall. He scoured the room for a place to hide, but these were vampires. His pulse was erratic, his heart like a horse gone wild. Hiding wouldn't help. He added Mateo's name to the growing list of people he'd enact vengeance upon when he was dead, right there beneath Arthi's.
Do you trust me?
Jin asked. He flicked a look at the window and mentally mapped the perimeter of the house. Flick's laugh was like brittle glass.
Not entirely. Good girl. Grab a few samples and, at my command, run to the next room and jump from the balcony. It's time for Plan C.
She stopped gathering her things.
What? We're on the second floor. What's Plan B?
Jin shrugged.
Just not fond of the letter. Jump, Felicity.
With that, Jin straightened the lapels of his jacket, smoothed back his hair, and strolled into the hall.